You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. I hope that you had a great week, and I've got to tell you, your week's going to get even better because the season premiere of The Real Housewives of New Jersey is going to blow your hair back. I can't even tell you how much you're going to enjoy it. You will not even remember that Real Housewives of Salt Lake City even existed, which, by the way, isn't that hard to do, because it is so good. By the end of the episode, I was at the edge of my seat. I was screaming at the television. It is so good. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm just going to tell you that by the end of it, you're going to want to DM me and say, thank God that this show exists. Okay? I'm just going to say it there. So check that out. I'm really excited about a new Netflix documentary that's about to air called Pelé. It is the documentary about the Brazilian soccer legend. I have been obsessed with him since I was little because my mom would let us watch this one movie called Victory. I feel like there was a good 2 year period where they played it on a repeat all the time, but it didn't even matter because it was one of the best movies. Sylvester Stallone's in it. And as Allied POWs prepare for a soccer game against the German national team to be played in Nazi-occupied Paris, the French resistance and British officers are making plans for the team's escape. It's a great movie. I'm telling you, if you haven't watched it, look it up. It's called Victory. And Michael Caine is in it too. So good. So I'm excited about that documentary. Also, HBO has a 4-part documentary series called Allen versus Pharaoh that is going to premiere on Sunday. It's from award-winning investigative filmmakers Kirby Dick, Amy Zarin, and Amy Hurdy, and it goes behind the years of sensational headlines to reveal the private story of one of Hollywood's most notorious and public scandals. The accusation of sexual abuse against Woody Allen involving Dylan, his then 7-year-old daughter with Mia Farrow, their subsequent custody trial, the revelation of Allen's relationship with Farrow's daughter Soon Yi, and the controversial aftermath in the years that followed. So along with new investigative work, pieced together via intimate home movie footage, court documents, police evidence, revelatory videotape, and never-before-heard audio tapes, the series includes exclusive interviews on the subject with Mia Farrow, Dylan Farrow, Ronan Farrow, family friend Carly Simon, prosecutor Frank Macco, relatives, investigators, and experts. So check that out. That's going to be on HBO starting this Sunday. Now, in Bachelor news, host Chris Harrison said this weekend that he's stepping aside from the show for a period of time after defending a frontrunner on the current season who came under scrutiny for social media posts from her past. He said, "This historic season of The Bachelor should not be marred or overshadowed by my mistake or diminished by my actions," in an Instagram post. And he said, "To that end, I have consulted with Warner Brothers and ABC and will be stepping aside for a period of time and will not join the After the Final Rose special," which, of course, after the couple gets engaged, we get to see them on stage and he interviews them about what their life is like now that they are engaged to be married. So this is the 25th season of the show's enormously popular show, and the first in which ABC cast a black man, Mac James, as the show's star. So Chris Harrison apologized on Wednesday after speaking out on behalf of Rachel Kirkconnell, who was a contestant who was reportedly photographed at an antebellum plantation-themed fraternity formal 2 years ago. So she said in an Instagram post Thursday night that her ignorance was racist and she didn't recognize how offensive and racist her actions were, but that doesn't excuse them. She apologized to the communities and individuals her actions harmed and offended, and she wrote that she was ashamed of her lack of education. She also said, "I don't think one apology means that I deserve your forgiveness, but rather I hope I can earn your forgiveness through my future actions." So he did. Chris Harrison did not say how long he would be stepping aside, but he did say, "I'm dedicated to getting educated on a more profound and productive level than ever before. And I want to ensure our cast and crew members, to my friends, colleagues, and our fans, this is not just a moment, but a commitment to greater understanding that I will actively make every day." So I was very eager to talk to Reality Steve, who is an old friend. He is the go-to expert on all things Bachelor Nation, to ask him about news that Chris Harrison was stepping aside temporarily, what will happen with the next season of The Bachelorette without him as host, or perhaps if he's going to be host, when they can start filming. And also, we talked a little bit about why Matt James was a horrible choice for The Bachelor. And he brought up something that made me raise my eyebrow, because he said, "Matt is terrible because he just doesn't get it, the filming. He's not used to it. He wasn't a contestant. So he can't go along with things the way that other contestants who become The Bachelor do. Things like dating 26 women at one time, or pretending that you're into someone that you're really not into. Because if you're almost groomed for these bizarre circumstances, an outsider would just walk into it and not know what to do. So this idea of bringing somebody who has been an outsider who had a real job, and then all of a sudden they're thrust into this very strange set of circumstances that the show requires would be very difficult. It reminded me of this episode I did. It's episode 121. You've got to go back and listen to it because it's actually my favorite episode of all time. I interviewed the gentleman that created Below Deck and Surreal Life and also Rock of Love with Brett Michaels. And he said it was enormously difficult to get Brett Michaels to go along with the program because he'd never actually dated anyone before. He became a rock star so young that his experience with women was basically just having groupies. Like, he just opened the door of the green room and there were women standing in line to sleep with him. So they had to coax him into dates. Like, okay, so when you go sit down with this woman, what you do is you ask her her name, you ask her questions about herself, like, how are you feeling? Where are you from? What do you like to do? Is there anything you like to eat? And he's like, well, what do you mean? Because he's just used to women just like walking up and taking the top off. So it kind of made me think of that and laugh. But also made me realize that they chose Matt because of his friendship with Tyler Cameron, who was on the show. So even though Tyler was his friend and had been on the show, that still Matt was unsophisticated in the ways of the way that the show is filmed. And that is kind of funny and strange to think of, but it does make sense once Steve put it into perspective. And then also I wanted to ask him about some of the couples that are still on the show. And if there's a Bachelor in Paradise, who is waiting by the phone, waiting patiently? Like, I need to go back to Paradise. Then I also had Jen, my old friend, who's a medium, come on, because I wanted to ask her about the Cecil Hotel and the disappearance and then the finding the body of Alyssa Lamb in the water tank at the top of the hotel. A lot of people have watched this bizarre story unfold on a Netflix show about the Cecil Hotel in Los Angeles, which is probably the most creepy hotel in existence. It's like, if The Shining were real, it would be this hotel. And it's in downtown LA near Skid Row, and a ton of serial killers have lived there. And this woman who was a visiting student disappeared from the hotel, and then 9 days later, her body's found in the water tank at the top of the hotel. So I wanted to ask Jen what she thought about how this woman disappeared and if the circumstances of her death have to do with someone taking her to the top of the building and pushing her in the water tank. And we also talk about the mysterious disappearance of Chris Metallic in Canada and about Anna Nicole Smith, because I just saw, I believe it was like a Dateline on her with her daughter and Larry Burkhead. And I wanted to circle back and kind of find out more about her relationship with the husband that she was married to, who passed away and had an enormous fortune. So that's going to be great with Jen too. So sit back, relax, enjoy, and here we go. My buddy, Reality Steve, is back. Steve Carbone is the expert in all things Bachelor Nation, and it's obviously been quite a few weeks. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, you can say that again. Thanks for having me on.
All right, first thing, what in the world is going on over at Bachelor headquarters? What do you think's going on internally?
It's a really good question, and I just don't think we have enough answers as of right now, because it's still fairly new. It only broke on Saturday that Chris has decided to step aside for, I think the wording he used was step aside for a period of time. We don't even know what that means. The only thing he said for sure is that he will not be a part of the After the Final Rose special, which tapes in a week or two. So we know he won't be a part of that. Outside of that, we just don't know. Bachelorette normally starts filming in about a month. I think if we are dealing with anything serious here, this guy should sit out the Bachelorette season. I mean, sitting out one two-hour episode, the After the Final Rose, and then coming back and starting to film a month later after what he said in his speech, apology, whatever you want to call it, do we really think he learned anything in a month? Like, I don't think so. I think he's got to sit out a full season, if not be done for good. I mean, I just don't know. It's all going to be dependent on the network. I don't know where they stand on this. I don't know how serious Chris is. It's a lot of unanswered questions right now. But if you ask me, I think he should sit out at least Bachelorette season, maybe even Paradise as well. And if he is going to return, come back in September for the next Bachelor season. I really think they need to either shut it down for good or just do a complete overhaul of how they go about doing this show. And they really need to address their diversity issue, because as we've seen by Bachelor Data on Instagram, they might have cast a bunch of more diverse people on the show and BIPOC contestants, but they're not getting any time. The top six most people have gotten the most screen time this season are all white girls. And I think the top four most followed women this season on Instagram are all white girls. Yet 8 of the 11 women left are black or BIPOC. So they're not doing something right. And, but maybe it's just ingrained in the franchise. This is a white show for white people. I don't know. But do they want to keep it that way and just be like, all right, well, we're going to lose some people that are upset about our race stuff, fine, we'll just march ahead and we're going to keep doing what we're doing. I think they're in trouble if they do that. They really need to address their racial diversity issue on this show big time. I just think that this show, well, I know that this show is run by white people. Everyone in a higher up position there is white. And I honestly don't think that, when the whole Rachel thing, Kirk Connell, the contestant, was going down, you know, as I've been saying on my podcast and in my column, I've been speaking to people with Rachel's and inner circle, and everyone was saying, why isn't she talking? Why isn't she talking? And they're like, she wants to. They're not letting her.
Yeah. I remember there was a report where Rachel Lindsay had said there's no contractual, there's nothing contractually that dissuades her from coming forward. That is not true. She isn't allowed to talk to the press without permission.
Well, not to the press, but to release something on Instagram like she eventually ended up doing. You're allowed to defend yourself on Instagram if somebody's calling you a racist. And that's why everyone was like, why hasn't she said something? Put out an Instagram story, put out something on her Instagram feed. And from everything that I was being told from the inside was they're not letting her. And the reason they weren't letting her, and this is before the Antebellum pictures came out, everything before that was, don't worry about it, it'll blow over. So clearly this show didn't think it was that big of a deal. Wow. But then when it became national news, when the Antebellum pictures came out, when every outlet was running with it, ET, E! Online, Us Weekly, People, that's when they were like, oh, crap, we got a problem on our hands. You should probably release something.
Wow.
And then it took them a week for her to release something because they had to, she had to run it by them. So while Rachel is correct in saying there's nothing in your contract that says you can't speak out, because this wasn't show related. It wasn't like she was talking about an edit she got on the show. It wasn't like she was going to be talking about a storyline on the show. This was accusations brought up against her. And the precedent for this was Garrett. When Garrett had his whole thing with his Instagram likes during Becca's season, those came out before the first episode aired. And the day after her premiere, Garrett released something on Instagram. So why wasn't Rachel allowed to release something for 6 weeks? Because they didn't think it was a big deal. And then the Antebellum pictures came out and it was, okay, you need to do something. And it still took them a week for them to let her release something because they wanted to see it first. And then we saw what she released, which was 10 times better than what Chris Harrison said. But so Rachel's right. You are not allowed to say something on Instagram that doesn't have to do with the show. But what I'm here and was reporting was that she wasn't being allowed to.
So a lot of questions about how well they're vetting these contestants. What do you know of the process that they use to look for potential castmates or cast members for the show?
I don't know what their vetting process is anymore. They're certainly not doing a good job because way too many people are falling through the cracks with basic stuff that is clearly online with just a search. I mean, that seems to become the new sport in Bachelor and Bachelorette world is the second the cast is released, let's find the worst person on the cast and let's just dig through everything. And, you know, the Rachel stuff, the Antebellum pics weren't on her own Instagram page, so I don't know how people would have found that. I don't know if she was tagged in them or what, but I mean, it would take a lot for that particular picture to get out. But the likes of her friends and a Confederate flag picture, I mean, that's just doing homework and that's just doing a basic study of some of the contestants. So I'm not sure what their process is. It seems to me like they get their cast and they're like, okay, let's do a Google search. Let's skim their Instagram. Let's skim their Twitter. But yeah, if someone has a tweet from 8 years ago, is someone in the ABC or NZK department really going to scan every contestant's Twitter feed back 8 years? Probably not. So if you have an old tweet, it's probably going to get overlooked. So I don't know. I don't know what their process is, but they're clearly not doing a good job.
Who do you think is going to take over as host of After the Final Rose? And if there has to be a new host for The Bachelorette, which you've just said is an absolutely necessary thing, who do you think they're going to choose for those two things? Will it be the same person? Will it be different people?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine right now because it still is so new. If I had to guess, I would say the most appropriate person to put in that role for this particular After the Final Rose would be Rachel Lindsay. One, I don't know if Rachel even wants to do it because right. She seems fed up with the franchise. But two, it makes the most sense because she's been the most vocal so far. She was the one that had to endure the Chris Harrison interview. And she is a former lead. She is a host in real life. So it's not like you're just bringing somebody in. She makes the most sense. And she could be a woman of color sitting there at the After the Final Rose really grilling Rachel about, hey, why did you do this? What do you know why what you did now is wrong? What are you going to do to better yourself? Because that's all anyone wants to hear at this point. And looking at Rachel's apology, she didn't make any excuses. I know everybody thought that she was going to, but I knew, I pretty much had an idea that was coming because of everything I was hearing behind the scenes. They were like, she's mortified. If it's not Rachel Lindsay, I don't know who it would be. And it's a really good question because with Chris out and, you know, this After the Final Rose, I believe is definitely going to be taped. It's going to be the first one that's taped in a really long time. They've all been live, but with COVID and having to get to the next location for Bachelorette and wherever that may be, because now they've changed that up. I don't know. It's why they're taping the After the Final Rose this year, because they have to. Because usually Bachelorette starts airing the week of Matt's finale, or starts filming the week of Matt's finale. So they have to give themselves a little leeway on the back end to quarantine. So Rachel makes the most sense to me, Rachel Lindsay. But outside of that, I mean, would it really, like, I'm just thinking of the other people in the franchise. Like, if you throw a, you know, if you throw a Wells or a JoJo or a Ben Higgins out there as your host, people are going to be like, what?
Right. You've done nothing to fix the problem. I'm going to say,
yeah.
I'm going to say, I think that the next host is going to be and should be Mike Johnson, because he has broadcast experience. People thought he should have been a bachelor to begin with, and he's loyal to them.
I think Mike might be in the same boat as Rachel. Like, do I want to be a part of this franchise unless I see some actual active, some action by this network and this franchise to show change? Because we haven't seen any. I mean, Tayshia's men and Matt's women have definitely been the most diverse cast by far that we've ever seen on this show. So they improved that way by casting more BIPOC contestants. However, I mean, it hasn't really, based on everything that's going on, what's really changed? Nothing.
What about Tayshia as a host?
Yeah, I had tweeted that out, either Rachel or Tayshia.
So tell me a little bit about what you know so far of The Bachelorette. You mentioned that it's going to be, they will be filming next month. Do you have any reason to believe that Katie is going to be the Bachelorette, or you're unsure at this point? And also, is it too late for them to scrap it and just plan on Bachelor in Paradise to kind of give viewership and the network a break so people can kind of reclaim their love for the show and they can modernize it?
Yeah, it's possible. I don't have solid answers to either of those, although I don't think Katie's going to be the Bachelorette anymore, not because of everything that's gone down in the last week. I don't think that is something they need to do right now. As they taped the Women Tell All two Thursdays ago, it was going to be Katie. However, with everything that's gone down, I don't think that's happening anymore. And I've been told they're kind of just in scramble mode right now of what they're going to do. Could they scrap Bachelorette again and wait? And just wait till June to film Paradise and run a later season of Bachelorette? I mean, I guess it's possible. Film it in July again, like they did for Claire and Tayshia's season, maybe. But as far as I know, they are currently scouting locations for next Bachelorette season, which was originally supposed to be in Canada. And then their Trudeau came out and gave their harsh restrictions on filming and quarantining and all that stuff. So I heard Canada is pretty much out of the picture now. So now they're looking at U.S. resorts.
I see.
So I think there's so many things up in the air right now that have changed from when I reported it's going to be Katie and it's going to be Canada. It's definitely, I'm almost positive it's not going to be Katie anymore. And I'm pretty sure they're not going to Canada anymore. So
do you think that there's any chance when they choose the next Bachelor and Bachelorettes, as they move forward, will they, and I could just be clinging to a dream here, go back to the first seasons and how they chose people plucked from obscurity, from, you know, nowhere, from outside of Bachelor Nation, people with real jobs, real professions? Do you think they'll go back to that, or do you think they're going to continue to just use from the Bachelor Nation pot?
Well, they tried that with Matt, and look where we are. Right. Matt was not from the franchise, and
but
you know, Robert Mills.
But because he's friends with Tyler.
Well, he was never on a show. He was a friend of somebody, of the most popular male contestant on the show. So, but Matt was never on a show. Granted, he was supposed to be on Claire's season, and he would have been on Claire's season if it wasn't a pandemic. But
he's also he was like a TikTok star. I'm talking about somebody who's like, they worked at a bank. They're 28, yeah. 29, 30. They have had zero time to pursue love, and they've got like a real career that they might go back to.
I don't see it, only because they've said it, that Robert Mills even said when he was discussing Next Bachelorette about a month ago, said 99.9% we're going back to our formula of someone from the franchise. I just think that they need somebody who has been through the process before and understand it, because I've heard behind the scenes that Matt was an absolute disaster to deal with. So
why was he a disaster to work with? What
because he had never been through it himself, and he didn't know what to do, kind of what to say, what things were like. He didn't understand, like, when they're bringing other girls in, like, he doesn't understand the process. Like, you kind of have to get it. You have to understand the game, and he understood none of it, and he doesn't. And, you know, he was going through it the first time for the first time, just like these women were. And they want somebody, basically they want somebody that they can produce. And he didn't understand, like, dude, you got to do certain things. You have to say certain things. You have to feign interest in women that maybe you don't have
an interest in. Oh my gosh, too funny.
That's kind of the game. And that's why I don't think they're ever going to go with somebody again. They tried it. And not that Matt Season is a failure, but the fact that Robert Mills, 3 or 4 weeks into the season, said, yeah, our next bachelor at 99.9% will be someone from this franchise, pretty much goes to show that they were like, all right, we tried it for the first time. And you realize that was the first time in 25 seasons, I believe, that the lead was not someone from the show. Those people, at least when they built, when they pick from within the franchise, the fans already have a built-in liking towards them. I mean, some people might not like them, but at least every single person that in a, as a contestant has a built-in fan base to be like, okay, I watched her on this season or I watched him on that season. Wow, I'd love to see them find love because I really like them and whatever. When you bring in somebody from the outside, you're just crossing your fingers hoping people like this guy when they know nothing about him. And same thing with Matt. Nobody knew anything about Matt. He was just a guy that was right. Tyler Cameron's friend.
Who does dance routines. Okay, two last quick questions. First is, who in the Bachelor Nation world is right now waiting by the phone, clinging to the hope that they will be called for Bachelor in Paradise? Like, give me one or two people you're like, they're ready to go.
Oh, geez. I mean, you could take any of Peter's top four women outside of Maddie, since she's got a boyfriend. But, I mean, Hannah Ann, Victoria Fuller, Kelsey Weir, they'll all be on it as long as they want to be on it, because they'll all be asked. Tayshia's men, I mean, Ben Smith for sure is going to be there.
Oh,
Ivan,
for
I'm sure,
sure
is going to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, you just... They,
would Peter
that's
be
the
on?
Thing about Paradise this season.
I feel what? Like I feel like Peter would be jonesing for a chance to be back on TV,
no,
too.
I doubt he would. No. We've never had a lead that shows up on these summer shows as a contestant. They think they're above it. And I think Peter thinks he's above going on a summer dating show.
Well, he's not. So there you go.
The thing with Paradise this season, if, you know, assuming this all happens or whatever, no matter who the host is, you know, they, because we didn't have a Paradise last season, they have four seasons to choose from. So this is going to be like an all-star season. You've got Peter's women, you've got Tayshia's men, you've got Matt's women, and you've got the next Bachelorette's men. I mean, that's four seasons that they have, that those people have never been on Paradise before. So it's probably going to be, it'll be easy to convince people to do it, because you'll be like, hey, this is going to be the most talked about Paradise season.
That's
pretty much going to be a quote unquote all-star season.
Right.
You got to be part of it. I mean, it's going to be an easy sell for them.
Well, and also you say the Instagram likes and comments that you will achieve after appearing on the show is enough for these people to be jonesing for a spot. All right. Last question is, do you think there's a chance that Peter and Kelly Flanagan will ever walk down the aisle, not as bridesmaids or groomsmen, but actually as a wedded couple, leaving a church together, hand in hand?
I'd be surprised. I don't see them long term. I don't think Peter doesn't come across to me as somebody. I mean, I guess I'm looking at that as a short term thing, like in the short term. No, because Peter is clearly somebody that wants to be a pilot and be single. And it's very tough to it's a certain type of woman that wants to be married to a pilot who's gone a lot. And you've all heard the stories of what pilots do when they're not at home.
Right.
And like, I don't think Peter is any different. So I think Peter enjoys being this swinging single pilot that look at all the things that Peter Weber has done in literally the last 2 years in regards to women. The story that I reported before he was ever on Hannah's season was that he left a girl that he was seeing, that he was saying, I want you to move to Santa Barbara and live with me. He left her all of a sudden out of the blue. And next thing you know, she finds out he's on Hannah Brown's season. And then he falls in love with Hannah Brown. And then his season starts and Hannah Brown pops back up on his season. And he's literally face to face with her, looking like they want to make out in his second episode. And then he chooses Hannah Ann and gets engaged to her. And then a month later, he breaks up with Hannah Ann and says, I want to try with Maddie. And that lasted 2 days. And then 2 weeks after that, he's with Kelly Flanagan. Does this guy seem like this is somebody that wants to be married anytime soon? Certainly doesn't look like it to me. Just like he wants to play the field. You know?
He seems like a guy who is walking through life like he's in the like perpetually Tom Cruise and Top Gun. Like that's his life. And I feel like he had hoped that it launched into a movie or television commercial career, and that's probably not happening, partly due to COVID. So he's moved to New York. What is his career trajectory from here? Do you think he'll like write some like romance novels based on his role as a pilot?
I think it sounds like he wants to just do pilot stuff. I think he still wants to remain a pilot. It's in his family. His mother was a flight attendant. His dad obviously was a pilot. It seems like he wants to be a pilot and just base himself out of New York. I guess the best part about all of this is he's kind of out from under Barb's wing, and he's living on his own for the first time in God knows how long. And he's not living at home anymore. He's actually living in New York City. And
meanwhile, the guy's almost 30, and we're talking to him like he's a toddler. Like, you can do it, buddy. Yeah. You can do it on your own. What a mess.
Yeah, you can make it. You can make it in New York. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Too funny.
But yeah, I think that's probably the best news for him, is that he's out from under Barb's, whatever you want to call it. It's not living at his parents anymore, and he's, you know, living in New York. But I thought I remember seeing on one of his stories or whatever, or in an interview, that his flying career is now based out of New York. So, I mean, I guess good for him. But yeah, that seems like that's what he wants to do.
He's going to be flying some like bachelor plane. They're going to spray paint the side of it, and it's going to have like velvet couches and spritzers in it. Listen, I love following you because you always have the best gossip. You have the best juice, and I'm appreciative of all the hard work. You work super hard. I know how hard you work. I appreciate it. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah. Everything is Reality Steve. It's Twitter Reality Steve, Instagram Reality Steve, my website's realitysteve.com, and my podcast is the Reality Steve Podcast. So yeah, we're obviously, this is what's going on right now in Bachelor Nation is literally a day-to-day thing. I just don't think we know a lot right now, as stuff is breaking all the time. So I'm doing my best to keep up, and I do a live every Instagram live every Tuesday night with Ashley Spivey that we do at eight Eastern, 5 Central. I mean, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. So yeah, that's pretty much it, but I'll be updating people as much as I can with as much info as I can, to be honest with you.
And there's just probably no chance now that Hannah and Dylan will have their wedding at Bachelor in Paradise. Are we in agreement?
Oh, I mean, I guess it could still happen, because it looks like there's still going to be a paradise, but I don't know who's going to, you know, be the host of it. And if they even want we've seen the weddings that they've put together for Paradise. They're not the most extravagant, and those two seem a little bougie to not want a Paradise wedding. But hey, I don't know. Maybe they do want a Paradise wedding. I don't know either of them well at all. So, my guess would be no. The weddings they've had down in Paradise have been pretty janky when you look at it.
Right. They're not ideal.
They're not the weddings that, you know, they're not the weddings at Monarch Beach that Tanner and Jade got, you know, and Sean
Those days are gone.
Ashley and JP.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The days of the Trista and Ryan wedding are long gone. Now it's like, we got a picnic table for you, and we got a couple people you've never met willing to stand in as witnesses, and this is all that you got. In a Forever 21 dress with plastic flowers and a Hawaiian shirt from Tommy Bahama. Congratulations.
Yep. Yeah, I don't see Dylan and Hannah going that route.
Jen Yates is back. I've got another couple of unsolved mysteries. Are you ready for the challenge?
Always.
Okay, so here we go. The body of Alyssa Lamb, a Canadian student at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, was recovered from a water tank atop the Cecil Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, at which she had been staying preceding her death on February 19th, 2013. She'd been reported missing at the beginning of the month. A maintenance worker at the hotel discovered the body when investigating guest complaints of problems with the water supply and water pressure. So her disappearance had been widely reported. Interest had increased 5 days prior to her body's discovery when the LAPD released a video of the last time she was known to have been seen on the day of her disappearance by an elevator security camera in the hotel. So in the footage, she's seen exiting and re-entering the elevator, talking and gesturing in the hallway outside, and sometimes seeming to hide within the elevator, which itself appears to be malfunctioning. The video went viral on the internet, with many viewers reporting that they found it unsettling. Explanations range from claims of paranormal involvement to bipolar disorder, which she took medication for, and it's also been argued that the video was altered prior to the release. The circumstances of her death once she was found also raise questions, especially in light of the hotel's history in relation to other notable deaths and murders. Her body was naked, with most of her clothes and personal effects floating in the water near her. It took the LA coroner's office 4 months after repeated delays to release the autopsy report, which reports no evidence of physical trauma and that states that the manner of death was accidental. Now, guests at the Cecil, now rebranded as Stay on Main, sued the hotel after the incident, and her parents filed a separate suit later that year. The latter was dismissed in 2015, and some of the early internet interest noted that there were considered to be unusual circumstances between her death and the 2002 horror film Dark Water, and that case has since been referenced in international pop culture.
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't think that there was any... Well, look, there's paranormal activity there. I definitely think she could have been or was it tuned into something, but this is more about her being unstable, mentally unstable, some kind of psychotic break or something like that. I actually have a visual of her going into that tank by herself, right? And then she takes off her clothes or however that worked. Like, there's just, she got in herself. I do think she felt like she was running away from something. And look, I do believe that there's people with quote unquote, you know, paranoid schizophrenia who really truly are talking to the spirit world. And I don't think that, and I do think that that's part of what was going on, but nothing killed her. She drowned. Yeah.
And when you tap into that hotel, do you think that there are spirits throughout the hotel, and this idea that they can do something to you to cause harm? Is that a legitimate thing that can happen?
Well, here's the deal. They can't do anything to you physically. I haven't seen that. I don't believe that. Even the darker entities that I've tuned into, sure, they can scare you though enough where if you see something or hear something, it's going to freak you out enough to, who knows, like if you're on the ledge of something, you fall off of the ledge, something like that, which obviously causes harm, but there's no spirit that actually truly caused that, if that makes sense. I mean, I guess in some ways you could look at it as that, but they can't physically cause harm, if that makes sense.
A place like the Cecil Hotel had been inhabited at different points by at least a few serial killers. And there are countless people that have stayed there that have said, I get an icky feeling when I'm there. If there's someone like Richard Ramirez, who was a serial killer, why would they haunt that hotel when they've lived other places and the crimes that they've committed are all over the place? Why would all those spirits stay in one hotel? What's the attraction to the Cecil Hotel?
So I feel like for this specifically, well, first of all, spirits can travel, right? But the truer answer here is when there's enough dark energy in one physical place, such as this hotel, there is going to be a dark attraction. It's just going to continuously like build. It's almost like, I just see it as like a, you know, something starting at like a small dark hole that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so it kind of sucks more spirits in, if that makes sense. And they're attracted to the darkness. And so that's why. And that's why it's icky.
Chris Metallic, he was a young man who went missing in November of 2012 in the small Canadian town of Sackville, New Brunswick. He'd been at a party and was drunk and had also possibly been using drugs. He was last seen on a road before he disappeared. The Tantramar River was searched for Metallic's body, but nothing was found. So he and his friends went to a house party on Allison Avenue and had a lot to drink that night. He passed out for a bit and took his sneakers and glasses off and put his phone down. After about an hour or so, he got up again, didn't put his shoes or glasses back on and left his phone and continued hanging out with his friends during the party. And then he ended up outside with one of his friends and they went to another house the next street over on Wellington Avenue. Chris got sick over there and he wanted to go home and his friends wanted to go back to the party. He was intoxicated and didn't realize he'd left his shoes at the party. So his friend loaned him a pair of flip-flops to walk home and said he'll find his shoes the next day. Well, the last time Chris was seen by his friend was outside the party where they split up. His friend went back to the party and Chris said he was walking home. But that was around 2 o'clock a.m. and it should have only lasted less than 20 minutes to walk home.
So he was definitely on drugs and whatever he took kind of kicked in a way when he left that last place. And I feel like he fell into something. I feel that it was water. So I know that you said they looked in some body of water, but I don't think it was that body of water. I think it was something else. And there's also an element of fear coming from him. I don't know why. I'll be honest. It's just coming like that. He wanted to get out of there and he was scared. But whatever he took kind of just, you know, kicked in and mixed with alcohol, not a good combination. And I feel like he stumbled and fell into water. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Anna Nicole Smith, very famous. A lot of people know her. She was born Vicki Lynn Hogan. She was an American model, actress, and TV personality. First gained popularity in Playboy magazine when she won the title of 1993 Playmate of the Year. She modeled for fashion companies, including Guess, H&M, Heatherette, and Lane Bryant. She dropped out of high school at age 14 in 1982, married in 1985, and divorced in 1993. In 1994, her highly publicized second marriage was to an 89-year-old billionaire by the name of J. Howard Marshall and resulted in speculation that she married the octogenarian for his money, which of course she denied. Following his death in 1995, she began a lengthy legal battle over a share of his estate. Her case reached the Supreme Court of the United States, Marshall versus Marshall on a question of federal jurisdiction, and Stern versus Marshall on a question of bankruptcy court authority. She died in 2007 in Hollywood, Florida, in a hotel room as a result of an overdose of prescription drugs. And in the months leading up to her death, she was the focus of renewed press coverage surrounding the death of her son, Daniel, and the paternity and custody battle over her newborn daughter, Dani Lynn Burkhard. So when you channel her, what do you get? Because she's been in the news recently because Larry Burkhead, who's been a seemingly great father to their daughter, Dani Lynn, came forward to talk about how his daughter's doing today.
You know, I really like tuning into her. She's, you know, I mean, obviously I know who she is and I remember her. She has that same kind of personality coming through. The first message that comes through with her is interesting. Like, obviously now she's at peace. She can look at her life and say, you know, what went wrong. And she's happy that she's on the other side because she feels like her daughter is better off without her. She's also obviously with her son, and that's beautiful to see. She would have continued down this path. It would have happened if it didn't happen then. It would have happened, you know, 2, 3, 4, 10 years from when she died, because she was just on that path of self-destruction. But she did have, like, I mean, her heart, even, you know, in that life was good. I mean, she was a good soul. She's showing me, like, I'm just seeing like her childhood flash. It was not easy. I feel like she had some abuse. I feel like she had some bullying. I feel like she was misunderstood. And she really, really just wanted to make, there was this part of her that just wanted to entertain, right? And that's clear. And she did. But she just comes through as saying, like, I'm glad my daughter didn't have me as a mother, which is so sad to say, but like, I understand where she's coming from.
Oh, wow. The circumstances surrounding her death, did she take medication of her own volition, or was there somebody that had been providing her medication when she was in a vulnerable position?
So, I mean, yes, it's hard to explain. So I feel like she was already on her own medication for sure. And we know that, like, she clearly had some drug issues along the way. And I don't think that those necessarily went anywhere. I feel like she improved at some point, but she had other ailments. And so I feel like she just had this kind of cocktail of stuff in her system that just wasn't going to work. But I also think that she was, so to your question, I feel like she was not mentally stable. She just wasn't. I mean, it got worse. And a part of that was because of the medications and drugs she was taking, of course. So anybody, yeah, like people in her life were like, oh, you should take this for this and you should take this for this. And it just was not a good combination. It just made things worse and worse for her, ultimately leading to just like, I just keep hearing like a cocktail that went bad.
So the second husband to billionaire J. Howard Marshall, who was 89, he left her out of the will and she contested it. Is there any feeling you get of them as a couple? Did he purposely keep her out of the will?
Yes.
Did he feel like she was using him for money?
I feel that he was persuaded to do that at some point, you know, obviously towards the end. I think that he didn't want to believe that, but he was convinced of it. So ultimately he did believe it.
Oh, so perhaps his son or his family members pushed him, but he did.
Exactly.
But he did have love for her.
He did. He did. And, you know, she had love for him. I mean, there is an element of, yes, this is strange. There was definitely a money thing involved. But she grew to love him in a way that you love family. It wasn't like, you know, a romantic love, but she did love him in her own way.
And then what feeling do you get from her son, Daniel, who passed just before her?
You know, he's interesting because I feel like he's actually a little bit more of an evolved soul, which I don't know anything about him, except that I know he died of drugs, right?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. He's just coming through. You know what it is? I feel like he's kind of a guardian angel for his sister. That's what I'm seeing. And they're very connected. So Anna and her son are definitely up there. There's a grandmother energy. I mean, there's a whole, you know, you could tune into 10 different family members, but there's a nice connection of family there. And then, yeah, he's watching over the little girl more so than Anna is.
So what is your message to people that are in the thick of the pandemic or trying to look forward to the year ahead? Is there anything that you get when you do these readings from loved ones, hopeful messages, perhaps, that things are looking up?
You know, the message that I've been given very strongly over this last year is everything that you have, everything that you need is already inside of you. And that the lessons that we're learning by being at home so much is that we can go inside ourselves and really pull onto our own intuition, our own courage, and really do whatever we have to in order to get through a difficult situation. And that it's our own attitude that shapes how we handle all of this. So that's really the biggest message I've gotten and tried to live by. I don't know if that has anything to do with anybody on the other side, except that I do feel like I receive messages about these things, especially in the middle of the night. I just wake up and there's like buzzing. But this, while our world has changed forever, things will get better.
Great. Okay. So if anyone wants to reach out to you, how can they reach you to get a reading?
Well, I am going to have a website this year, but until that happens, emailing is the best way. My email is jen4774. That's J-E-N as in Nicole, N as in Nicole, 4774 at yahoo.com.
Great. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Kate. Always a pleasure.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests, Steve and Jen. Remind you to click subscribe, very important. Leave a 5-star review. Jump in the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey. You can follow me on Twitter at Kate Casey. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. I have a list out right now. You can go to my Instagram and check it out of what to watch this week. Very important. You can find me on the Clubhouse app. I've been having tons of housewives join me in chat rooms, and you can jump in and ask them questions. And I'm going to have another one this week with Margaret and Jackie from New Jersey. And of course, I've got a Patreon page for bonus episodes. So this week, I'm going to have one with my friend Al Jean talking about the Wendy Williams documentary. I did one with Hannah Brown about the Netflix documentary, and much more fun guests coming. So make sure you check that out. As always, I'm hoping that you have a great week, and I look forward to circling back with you on Friday.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.